You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchat.com and the Teach Well Alliance. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I'm Vicky Maguire. I'm an education and leadership coach working with school leaders to support them to improve their own well-being and that of all of their staff. I also run group coaching programs for women leaders and have more recently set up the Women Lead Well Coaching Network to provide a supportive network for female school leaders at all levels across education. And the reason that I've done this is because I always felt as a leader in a school, when I was a head of English, when I was an assistant head and a deputy head, that I didn't always have a supportive network that I could fall back on when I was feeling under pressure. And I think it's really important that we support each other in education because it is a particularly stressful job, and leadership in education adds an extra layer of stress. And when you're working in a school in one of those roles, it's not always possible to speak to other people in your own school environment. So what the network does is it provides a safe space where you can seek support, ask for advice, and there will also be lots of other benefits of being in the network. There will be a monthly group coaching call where we explore a variety of issues. The next one that we do, we're looking at challenging conversations. At one in the future, we're going to be looking at building confidence and resilience. So there are lots of different topics and themes that we will explore in the group coaching calls once a month. There'll also be a coach's couch where a member of the network can come to me with a challenge that they're facing, and I will coach them in a live coaching session where people can come along and observe, and then afterwards there'll be a discussion about it where more advice and perspectives can be shared. We're going to do a yearly conference where we'll get some of the best voices in women's educational leadership to join us for professional development. And there's a community group. It's on a platform called Podia, which is a completely private platform, but it's a little bit like a Facebook group where you can share ideas, where you can have a conversation, a place where you can just go and say, this has happened, what do I do? It's just as simple as that sometimes. So if you would like to join the network, we already have all of the people who've been on my group coaching program so far are in the network, but I want to open it up so that it has a broader reach. So if you'd like to join the network, if you email me at vicky@womenleadwell.co.uk, I'm offering 50% off for the first 10 people to email me at that email address. So I really look forward to hearing from you and to you joining the network. On the show today, I've got Daniel Bull. Now, Daniel has his own podcast called the More Than a Job podcast. And I've listened to that and I really love it. And he has had some amazing guests on there, including Tom Bennett and Mary Myatt and a whole host of other amazing people. And I think he has a lot to say about education. From his doing his podcast, he's learned a lot about education. So I got him on the show today. We talk about all sorts of educational issues, CPD, house systems, pastoral issues. And I'm sure you're going to enjoy this conversation. So here he is, Daniel Bull. Enjoy the interview. Daniel Bull, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thanks. It's an absolute pleasure to join you. So thank you for inviting me on.
Well, from one podcaster to another today, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You've got your own podcast called the name has just dropped right out of my head.
That's okay. So it's called More Than a Job podcast.
More Than a Job. I knew it was something about how amazing teaching is as a job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a bit of an irony that you're coming on my show and I've quit teaching, but you know, I still loved it. I love working with kids and I loved it as a job. So first of all, start us off by giving us a little bit of background into you, what you do, and then we'll have a chat about your podcast.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I started teaching training back in 2010. I never really thought I wanted to go into teaching. It wasn't really something that was, it certainly wasn't top of the list. It was in the top few things. I mean, when I was at school, as in a school child, I wanted to be a forensic scientist. I wanted to be a policeman. I wanted to be all sorts of things. And eventually reality hits home. And, you know, I wasn't that good at science. Certainly wasn't fit and strong enough to be a policeman. But I really did love law, and I wanted to go on and study law. And my degree is business management and law, and I was going to think about converting into a law degree, and I'd have loved to have been a barrister. But time I graduated, it was 2009. It was credit crunch. People were out of work, left, right and centre. And I suppose I made a sort of a calculated decision to choose a route that was less risky. Obviously, to go into those who know how to get into law, the BVC, as it was called at the time, to train to be a barrister, a lot of money. It has to be self-funded.
Yeah.
And it would have resulted in, you know, I didn't have the financial means. I'm one of four children. The family wouldn't have had the financial means. And I wouldn't have put that on them either to have gone through that. And so anyway, teaching, as I say, was always in the sort of the top few. And I thought, okay, let's look at this. I do love my subject. And I started having teacher training and haven't looked back since. And I started that in 2010.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because all those jobs that you say, actually, you probably do most of those in the day-to-day job of a teacher, don't you? You've got to do some police work. There's a lot of detective work involved, some sort of forensic, especially if you do pastoral. There's an awful lot of investigative work going on, and being able to put an argument to kids is really important. So, you know, there's an element of being in a courtroom and presenting a case, isn't there? It's like you've managed to get all those things in another job.
Parents and governors, you know, and any other stakeholder. And then my career, so I started teaching business initially in my first year. Then from my second year, I was curriculum leader of business and politics, teaching GCSE and A level. And that was at Haberdashers Abraham Darby Academy in Telford, which is such a wonderful place and a place I still hold very true to my heart. The staff, the kids, the whole culture and ethos was wonderful. So I was curriculum leader for business and politics for 3 years. And then I became head of house for 2 years at Abraham Darby. And then I've had the chance to move on and take my first senior leader post, which I did at the start of 2017. I've been doing that since. As a head of house in a school, the heads who employed us had the model that we would be, you know, a head of school. He would focus on other things. He's not with us now, but that was the plan. And then I've taken on other responsibilities. The full personal development agenda is under my umbrella as well. So that's where the career's gone. But yes, I am a senior pastoral lead, and I absolutely love it. I really do.
It sounds like you do so much stuff. This is one of the problems that I had when I was in school. I just wanted to do everything. If anything came up, I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And then on top of it, now you make a podcast as well. So how did you end up making a podcast?
Well, it came from really when I was first appointed at the school I am now back in 2017. So there were three vacancies available, as there'd been a big reshuffle of staff. And three of us were appointed on the same day for the same job, and we shared the same office, and we did for 3 years. And we all became very good friends. We all have got very similar interests. We're also all very, very different, but we complement each other well. So we've always been together, and we've been through a lot. Our school has been through an awful lot over the past four and a bit years. We've had three head teachers in that time, a range of things. People may remember this back in 2017, but there was a school that was accused of putting CCTV cameras in the toilets. That was the school that I was at. It was National Press. Anne Diamond gave our head teacher a slagging off on the Right Show, or the Right Stuff, whatever it's called, that one that used to be on Channel 5. So, you know, we've been through a whole range of things. Yeah. And anyway, myself and my two colleagues, Mike and James, you know, we've been together the whole journey, been together throughout it. came in together and we're all still there together. And then we came to this current, sorry, lockdown this calendar year, about January time. We were still in school, as in staff were. And we just said, come on, let's just do something. We've always talked about it, so let's just do it. Should we record a podcast? Yeah, okay, what should we talk about? Just jotted a few ideas down on a piece of paper. And then next thing you know, we just sat down, we arranged a Zoom meeting, and we recorded three episodes. And then, very lucky through some contacts, Robert Halfen, who's chair of the Education Select Committee, former cabinet minister, he agreed to come onto the podcast as our sort of first proper official guest. And then we thought, actually, the guest thing works. Us sitting, chatting, interviewing people. And, you know, I reached out to people, and I'm so, so grateful to all of those who responded. There's a gentleman called Stephen Lane. He's known as Sputnik Steve on Twitter. He agreed to come on to discuss behaviour. Abby Bayford of the Academy Transformation Trust talked about her new book, Letter to My NQT Self. And she's a wonderful educator to talk to. And then it carried on from there. Politicians, big, you know, school leaders, Tom Bennett, David Weston, the list goes on. Sam Strickland. I can't begin to say how thankful and lucky we are. So that's sort of
I'm in awe of some of these guests that you've had on your podcast. I'm writing down names going. And I have to apologise because I don't know if you can hear in the background. I've got a 15-year-old son and he's obviously having some success on the Xbox game that he's playing on because he's cheering loudly out there. When you're talking, I'm putting the mute on so nobody can hear him. I did ask for him to be quiet, but as we all know, 15-year-olds don't always do what they're asked to do. So I don't know about you, but I mean, maybe the two of us on this episode can sell the benefit of podcasts for teachers and leaders in terms of CPD, because I don't know about you, but I have learned, I think, more from doing, I think I'm on, this is about episode 34 of the podcast now, and I think I've learned more from doing the podcast than I ever learned from a lot of the CPD courses that I attended or CPD sessions that I did. I just feel like I could go back in a school now as a head teacher and be so much more knowledgeable and able to do the job. What do you think? How have you found it?
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, we all know, don't we? Sat in the school hall, you switch off, you're disengaged immediately. It's boring. And it doesn't matter how well someone puts a presentation together, we're not interested. And I'm rubbish at sitting there and trying to maintain concentration. However, I love listening to audio books, to podcasts. I'm out in the garden, I'll put an audio book on. I do a lot of driving. I have a fairly lengthy commute. So it's a great opportunity to stop that time being dead time and actually be efficient with it, which is what I do. I'm a man who strives for efficiency in everything that I do. And listening to something is really helpful. And certainly doing the podcast, I think what's so great is you get to have conversations with people. You get to talk about your profession in a more informal sense. Although you're recording a podcast and you've got some questions to get through and all that malarkey. Ultimately, you're discussing education with people, and our guests have always sort of commented and thanked us for the fantastic relationship that we've got as the host and how we've made it nice and easy for them to chat and to discuss various things. Because I think that's important. It's not a job interview every single day. It's just discussing ideas and, yeah, I like that. I don't like that. And that's where it's been. I certainly have learned a lot from it. I feel I've learned a lot more. Plus, doing all the research before the guests come on, the amount of books I've been ordering and reading, and I always try and have the book of the guest on in the background. You can see my screen now. So we had Barry Smith on, the founding deputy of Michaela School most recently.
Yeah, just listened to that one today. Yeah.
Yeah. And the guest previously was Sam Strickland. So that one's down on the bottom shelf, as you can see.
Yeah.
And I've still got running the room because Tom Bennett is an utter legend and he's been such a really top bloke to us, to help us. So, yeah, I've got some more books coming, which I've got to quickly read and get to it. But I think it's important to know, you know, to have the respect to talk to a guest who's given up their time to at least, you know, investigate what they're saying and what they're thinking and then challenge them, push them, you know, I like to play devil's advocate and draw things out of people.
Yeah, I think in terms of what you're saying about CPD as well, it's for a lot of people who don't have time to read the books. And this is a lot of people because they're busy teaching, you know, there's not a lot of hours in the day. And it's a really good opportunity to have that hour or whatever it is to listen to someone. And they'll usually give you a flavour of what their message is in the book. So you get a little bit of a summary or an overview and you get the key messages. It's just a very quick way of engaging with some CPD, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, that's what we've tried to do with the podcast is to give people a flavour of what the Michaela model is, or what Sam Strickland believes is the Halcyon dream, or what Tom Bennett means by running the room, etc. It gives people a flavour. They think, okay, I can relate to those things. I can see that. I want to have a little, you know, I want to have a look more into this particular educator or this particular belief or philosophy. I think that's really, really important for people to do.
So what would you say have been your key learning points from doing the podcast? What have been the most enlightening things that you've learned?
I think I just know a lot more about education. I think in terms of, you know, we talk about the kids being knowledge rich. We need knowledge rich curriculums, give the kids as much facts and knowledge and everything that goes with it. And I think as an educator myself, I feel I'm a better strategist now. I think I know more about education. It's very easy to become pigeonholed in your particular area. So, as I said, I'm a senior leader for pastoral matters. But that doesn't mean teaching and learning isn't important, or the curriculum or outcomes, whatever it is. It all is important together. So I think for me, that's been really important. The whole drive of research-based education, I'm not trying to sell his books or trying to name drop them, but, you know, as Tom Bennett says, you know, to get rid of all the snake oil and all the folk tales that come with it. I mean, this is my 11th year of teaching. And I think about the last 11 years, I know I've been told every strategy under the sun is the best one. From having kids going outside of the room and discovery-based learning, and every kid must be doing something.
Brain gym.
The teacher shouldn't be talking. Don't put pressure on the kids, you know, don't cold call them. And I've been through everything. And now, and of course, that wasn't based on any real research. It was just that, oh, well, this is the recommendation that, you know, so-and-so gave me. Whereas now, with this research-driven world that we're in, people are specialists. A colleague said to me today, we're talking about basically discussing education. And yes, we can sound like bores sometimes, as that's all we're talking about. But he said, could you imagine a doctor not brushing up on the latest treatments and the latest operating techniques, not ever reading, you know, The Lancet? Well, it's the same for us, isn't it? It's the same for an accountant or a tax advisor. They have to know every single detail across the spectrum. And it's the same for us, isn't it? We are the most important people in the country, because if we don't do our job, goodness knows what will happen to the rest of the world.
I think it's interesting as well that, you know, there is so much information out there. There are so many books that you could buy. And I think the really good thing about having a podcast, you know, so you get Tom Bennett on, if somebody listens to that and thinks, you know what, that's my thing, I'm into that, then I think, like you were saying, you go and you can buy the book, and it can help you by giving you those little snippets and insights into the different theories or different models. You can pick something that suits you and that aligns with the values of your school and your school's specific needs. Because I think what's happened a lot in the past is people have gone, oh, the school down the road are doing, I don't know, growth mindset, so let's go for the growth mindset thing, and just jumped on a bandwagon with something and then tried to make it fit in their context. And that really, I don't think that approach actually works. But if you go that way where you engage in CPD, you listen to podcasts and you hear what's out there, you can then pick and choose the things that you want to look into further, can't you?
Yeah, I think, you know, the podcast, you've got to see it as an extended trailer, haven't you? It's there to give you a real flavour. It's giving you a bit more than a standard trailer would do. It's a bit more than the back, you know, and also to listen to the person. I mean, my colleague Mike, who I do the podcast with, him and I are very different in terms of our political alignment and our overall philosophy, which we both openly talk about. And I'm more happy to discuss that later on. my political stance and position on things. But what we found is, let's talk to Barry Smith. So with Michaela, my colleague Mike, just reading in the black and white Hard Light of Day, didn't think he was a big fan of the Michaela model. However, talking to Barry and understanding his perspective, you know, Mike said, actually, he's a really personable guy and I really understand his rationale behind it. And I think that's important. You know, society, as we see it across all walks of life, Brexit, Extinction Rebellion, Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, all these things, we're very polarised.
Yeah.
What, Jeremy Corbyn versus, you know, the Boris Johnson.
Traditionalists versus progressives in teaching, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, we've got to find a place in the middle. And I refer back to my colleague, Mike. We are at very, initially, we were at different ends of the sort of the spectrum in our approach, certainly to behaviour and education. As we've spent years together, because we now have, we're in our fifth year together, we are probably more closely aligned than any other person in the school, because we've both been open. I've listened to his ideas, he's listened to mine. Don't get me wrong, we have had disagreements and professional fallings out. But actually, when we've both understood the viewpoint of the other and where they're coming from, and we found the best of both worlds, and on the whole, we're pretty united in our approach of things. But that's because we've had that open mind and we've not allowed a polarisation. Because I hear this all the, you know, you hear all the time, oh, are you a no excuses person, or are you a completely a restorative thing? They're not actually that different. They're just the way they're badged or they're branded. And there's a few little things, isn't there? But it'd be the same if you went for a driving lesson. Different driving instructors will teach you a slightly different way, but ultimately you're still driving the car and, you know, and trying to get somewhere safely. And I think certainly, you know, talk about coming away from the podcast, I've listened and spoke to people who I would never have really thought I probably wouldn't have picked up their books, to be honest. And it's not criticizing people. I wouldn't have had the time or the interest, but actually I'm fascinated. I want to hear the other side. I want to hear the other angle. I want to have that debate and come to the best conclusion, ultimately, for our students.
It's really interesting. I did a project a while ago, and I was doing a course at Manchester University, and it was about CPD. And I did a survey with teachers about the best CPD methods for them. And professional discussion came out as the top of the list in terms of how they liked to, I suppose, how they liked to learn. And a podcast, it's that element of professional discussion, isn't it? I was really sad when Teachers TV came to an end. I used to, this is years ago, it must be in like the early 2000s or whatever, I used to watch Teachers TV. People used to make fun of me because I'd be saying, oh, have you watched this on Teachers TV or that? And people were like, you are so sad watching Teachers TV. But it's just that when you're interested in what you do, it's how it's listening to people talk about it, isn't it? And it's, and like when you have a discussion on a podcast, like on your podcast, there are so many different views being aired that it helps you to sort of get things straight in your own mind. And I think the best leaders are leaders who are open to changing things, you know, not set in their ways. Like, this is the way we do things. This is the way I've always done things. Don't come try and tell me a new way of doing things. Like, being open-minded, being open to change and new ideas, that's what the best leaders are doing. They're looking at what's out there and they're open to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned growth mindset earlier. It's something I really push with our kids, the idea of black box thinking and then that growth mindset. But there is nothing more frustrating than an individual whose default position is no, who is risk averse. No one's in the business of taking negligent risks. We're never going to take negligent risks that will put lives at risk. Yes, the policy might not work. We might have to go back and revisit it. We might have lost a few weeks, but so what? What we've done is we found that doesn't work. It doesn't suit our context. And I think my default position, and perhaps sometimes it's a weakness, is that I say, okay, yeah, what a great idea. Let's now see if we can do it. What resources do we require to try and make it work? You know, they're the type of things. Too quickly, people go into the minutiae of detail without knowing the top layer view first. That's always the question. What's our intention? What's our aim? What's our goal? Okay, we want to improve this. Okay, right, brilliant. What can we do to get there then? What can we do to improve? Here's some of the ideas. Okay, how can we now get there? Don't just say, oh, well, no, we haven't done that in the past, or, oh, I don't know, what might the parents think, or, oh, we might get some kickback. Okay, so what? Well, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? As long as no one's being negligent, reckless, or breaking the law, what is the worst that's going to happen? We have to stop being so risk averse, otherwise we won't move forward.
And I think it's good to take risks and to try things out, but it's also good when you're taking those risks to think about what might go wrong and put contingencies in place for that. It's so that you're not just taking risks willy-nilly, you it's actually carefully planned and you're thinking about it. But the way there is so much research-based, evidence-informed practice out there now that you're not taking that much of a risk because people have already been tried it and it worked, and you know, you're pretty much sure it's going to work. And contexts are different, don't get me wrong. You know, it's not a one size fits all. Different schools are different, teachers are different, children are different, the environment, the cultural, you know, the culture in a school, they're all different. But there's so much evidence-informed practice out there now, techniques and ideas, that you're not really taking that much of a risk, are you?
I'm also amazed at how so few staff in general, and I don't mean in my school, but I mean across the sector, haven't gone to see other schools. And I don't know how I feel about someone who's been at a school forever.
Yeah.
I just worry about that. I understand your safety and it's a good school and a good job and you're well respected, all those things, but you haven't seen something else. You haven't tried something else. And there are other ideas out there. And, you know, come back to just as it's in my eye line, you know, the Michaela model. I haven't been lucky enough to visit it. I hope I can. And I know Sam Strickland, his Duston School, have just announced they've been graded good in everything from RI. But as those sort of educators say, just come and see it. Stop laying into us on Twitter and criticising things. Just come and see it. Yeah. And I think that's really important. Like I say, there's so much out there. People think it's a risk because people don't know what it's like because they've only done it one way for so long. And yeah, it does. It drives me absolutely potty when the default answer is no.
I think that worries me as well sometimes when someone's been in a school from being an NQT and then they work their way up and they end up on a leadership team and they've only ever experienced that school. That's no disrespect to those people because, you know, it says a lot about you that you commit yourself to that school. And but I think you're right. It's important that you experience other things and listening to a podcast and listening to other leaders and different people from different places is a way of actually broadening your experience if you can't actually get out there, isn't it?
Before we find out more about how you can improve your own professional development, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat. Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Headteacher Chat is to support headteachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about Head Teacher Chat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. Head Teacher Chat, it's what head teachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview.
But I think we should be encouraging that. I really do. We should be encouraging people to go and see other schools and facilitate. You know, I think that's better CPD than being sat in hall and being spoken to. I really do.
I love the idea of being able to go in another school and swap roles. You know, go and do go into another school and be a deputy in the other school. My fear of doing that would always have been that I would want to stay in the other school because I would have liked it more than where I was. I think that would have been the problem for me. So tell me a bit about your role then, because you do the house thing and you're doing the personal development work, aren't you? So tell me a bit about that and how you've done that in your role.
I suppose I'll start with the house, as that is that's the day-to-day bread and butter thing that happens. So when I joined the school I'm at now, there was no previous house system, or hadn't been for a long time, and the head was very insistent that was his model that he wanted enacted. So he employed people who could fulfil that role, to be everything to everyone, and that was what we were employed to do, which of course put an awful lot of pressure. One, there were people who were upset because of course there'd been redundancies and people laid off previously. The old heads of year were no longer in a job and they were now replaced.
So it's like a house system that replaced. So have you gone sort of from year groups to
previous year system? Yeah,
a vertical system.
Completely changed it, and it's really important. But straight away, culture. We had to establish culture, and we did this with the house name. And we started off. This was actually before we officially started. We asked the students to come up with ideas and names for the houses, so there was a collective, thread throughout them. But that's really important, because you have that name, then you have your individual head of house. And of course, my house, you know, most of the time reflects my personality. My colleagues, it reflects their personalities. We had our logo. We had, you know, what we're about, what we believe in. We, house charity, such an important thing to get behind something, have a common aim as a team. The house championships, so that again, competition is a wonderful, wonderful thing. You know, you don't want blood on the corridors, but you certainly want a certain level of healthy competition. And I've exposed my colleague several times for this. My colleague James, I do the podcast with. We once had a competition because we were struggling to deal with the litter at lunchtime in the hall. So the boss at the time bought 4 house coloured bins, and he said, the house with the most litter in at the end of lunch will win X amount of house points, for argument's sake. James was he hadn't had a very good year in the competition. He was so desperate to win, he went to the general black sort of refuse bins, poured them into his own bin in order to, because he was so desperate to win the competition. I caught him. So then he poured some in my bin and went, well, you're involved now. And then he scuttled off, and you know, it was he won about 3 points or something for it. You know, it wasn't even worth, you know, it wasn't worth the crime, really. But that healthy competition's good, and we can.
And if you can get things like that going and get the buy-in, the kids will like really engage in stuff like that. They suddenly forget that they won't pick up rubbish because someone else might have touched it when they get the house points dangled in front of them.
Yeah, James got his house points. But the competitions is so, so important, and that also comes from Abraham Darby as well. When I was there, the system that the previous, there's a my previous head Lee brought in, it's fantastic. On the final Friday, I think it was, of October, broke up for October half term, we had house cross country. The whole school were outside on the field supporting one another, getting behind their house. We had the final day before Christmas, all the boys had the rugby competition, house rugby, all the girls did the house netball. The last day before the summer, we had the swimming gala, all these things. That competition, that sense of identity is so, so vital to get the buy-in from the students. This is before we even talk about extracurricular. This is just the house side of it. Assemblies are crucial. And I would put this offer out to anyone out there in the country. If you want to come and see good assemblies, and it always sounds so arrogant or egotistical to say this, we put on fantastic assemblies. And we put a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of care. We're all microphoned up. We have the lights on. We have backing music to every single slide. All the PowerPoints are perfect and well transitioned. The message is clear, consistent throughout. And it's an evented experience. I did my first house assembly today since probably February 2020. And it was heartwarming to be back, because we also start with a live performance. Oh, sorry, my virus and threat protection just blown up. Don't know what that means. And especially with the nice story I was about to say as well. It was our first assembly back for 18 months or so. And we always start with a live performance. So a student will predominantly sing. Sometimes they play an instrument. And we had our head girl today. She sang a song from the Cinderella musical. And it was absolutely, absolutely beautiful. Because she was practicing ready for assembly, she was there for the staff briefing and the head said to her, sing for the staff as well. What a great way to start the day. You've got one of your students who's confident enough to stand up and sing in front of 100 staff and then 260 of their peers. And she'll do the same tomorrow and two further days this week for the other houses. And it's wonderful. And assemblies are a brilliant thing. And it was something that Ofsted noted when they came to visit us in April, May 2019, I think.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because often assemblies are something that kids just feel like they have to endure. They just sit there like staring into space, don't they? Barely listening most of the time. But it's important in terms of developing the culture of your school, isn't it? And it's something that often I think some school leaders just think, oh, I've just got to do this assembly. I just do it. And it's just a thing that they have to endure and get through. And it's the same for the children.
I think it was one of probably the single biggest contributor to lack of culture, worsening behaviour, a lessening of identity in the school over the past, 18 months through the COVID business, because we weren't able to do that. We weren't able to get everyone together. I mean, my assembly today, I went back to the slides. I put in my very ever first assembly about what it means to be in this house to remind people. You can never repeat a message too many times. I think that's really, really crucial. That's what assembly's for. But the students will respond when they can clearly see that you care. And our assemblies, we put a lot of time, a lot of effort in, and it's really good. And we're more than happy to welcome anyone at any time to come and see our school and what we've got there. And we're slowly building back what we lost over the 18 months, because of course everything just fell apart. Yeah, and as in terms of the group gatherings, the competitions, the all those types of things.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with my son this morning as we were driving to school. There was an article on the news. We were listening to Radio 5 and they were talking about schools going back to doing assemblies and how some schools have been criticised for doing assemblies because it's what you might call a super spreader event. And he was saying assemblies are just so boring. He didn't really see the point. And he said, you can just do it on Microsoft Teams. But I think you are missing that everybody gets together and that feeling of community, aren't you, if you do your assemblies on Teams?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, it's ironic because we're doing a Zoom meeting now and I've been doing it for so long. It's what's allowed me to do the podcast. However, I hated it. I hated doing these virtual assemblies. They actually were more time consuming and more difficult to put together than actually standing up in front of people. But you can't gauge body language. You can't gain tone as what, gather the tone. You can't read the room. You can't see how people are responding to various things. They can't really see your level of enthusiasm or enjoyment, the little glances here and there. And it's really important. And assemblies are a really big thing to us, as well as the culture. Obviously, there's always a thread of whatever the topic might be, within the sort of the whole personal development agenda as well. That's the housing. And assemblies are a great time to reward and recognise. And, I don't mean always handing things out, but self-esteem is such a crucial thing that we all strive for, however old. And actually just putting someone's name up in assembly and saying, well done, you got the most merits this week, or well done, I've heard that you you won a medal in a swimming competition at the weekend, for example. That's really, really important as well. And we transfer, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, what I'm interested in terms of the house system that you've gone for is how it works. So do you have mixed year group forms?
So when we first started it, yes, we had vertical tutoring. It's approximately six from every year group, well, five or six in every year group were in each tutor group. Yeah. And I miss it. I wasn't an advocate going into it because I'd only ever experienced year group horizontal, even in a house system. So I didn't have an opinion either way. It comes back to what we said before about being open-minded. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was stunning. The fact that you can have, year 11s interacting with year 7s, it takes away some of the ideas of threat and here's the older students and they're big and scary. And actually it creates a community within another community, within a wider community. And it was really nice, really, really nice to see. With the COVID, of course, we had to go to year groups. And for this year anyway, we're still in year groups. I don't know, won't be my decision as to whether we go back to vertical, but one day, hopefully, if I'm a head teacher, it'll be vertical tutoring all the way for me now. Now I've experienced both.
It's interesting because a lot of people say, oh, you lose that sense of your year group identity, and it's hard because you've got particular messages that you want to do for year groups, or you've got pastoral things that you want to do. And I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? People have done it that way for so long that they put all these objections to it. In what else makes it work, in your opinion?
Sorry, just to go back to I'll go on to the year group thing. So we've got four houses, which leaves one day a week free in the mornings. So we always had that buffer. If you needed to specifically talk to year eight about a year eight issue, HPV vaccines, or taking mini options, you know, year nine to take the GCSE options, you could do. We've also got a curriculum which we call global learning, which drives our whole personal development agenda, PHSE, SMSE, fundamental British values, citizenship, etc., etc. And that is taught in year groups. So as it currently stands, six times a year, once the first week of every half term, they receive an assembly from the head teacher and myself. We have 50 minute periods, 50 minutes, and we focus on key things, but that's in a year group.
Right.
So you can then tailor it to be age appropriate, and you can, you know, change your message slightly. And we did those last week. So you can have a bit of both and still ensure they have their year group identity, but also the house identity as well.
Yeah,
I find the vertical tutoring, it brings out student leaders. It brings out opportunities for them to lead. And it does create the, we talk about house being a family. The whole point is that I will be your point of contact for 5 years, possibly 10 years if you've got multiple children, as we have. I've just had a year 11 leave, and her brother in year seven has just started. So I'll be interacting with that parent for the length of time that I'm at the school, or the children at the school. And I think within the tutor groups, it creates that family as well. And I think that's the key thing. I know I've talked about evidence-based, research and things. I haven't got any facts, any stats to back this up, because I think it's all anecdotal.
Mm.
It's all completely subjective. But I really, really liked the feel when I went into the rooms, and you can't record that. You can't measure that. You get a feeling, a gut instinct when you go in of how it is. And when you see the older students helping with the younger students, in my first year, I had year 11s almost begging me to be the manager of the year 7 and year 8 football teams in the house competitions. And they took the lead. They took the responsible, because they feel that sense of pride and big brotherly or big sisterly, affections that we have as siblings ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So tell me about the personal development. I think this is becoming really important, isn't it? And I think especially in the circumstances that we're in, coming out of COVID with mental health issues and everything that's brought up, in terms of your leadership of that, how have you gone about implementing, thinking about the curriculum aspects of it, and how are you delivering it, and the key bits that you want to focus on in terms of personal development?
Well, a lot of credit to the first head who appointed us back in 2017, because he insisted that, what we all know now as personal development was a taught lesson on the timetable once per week, rather than these drop-down days. I'm not a fan of these drop-down days at all. I think they're not a waste of time. That's a bit harsh, but they don't have the impact, as we know, when we look at anything to do with memory and cognitive science, being thrown all that information two or three times a year and then not coming back to it.
I also think when the children found out that it was a drop down day, they'd say to their parents, oh, it's just drop down day today, and your attendance would drop.
Yeah.
And then how do you make sure that your children are engaging in that curriculum? It's so difficult. Yeah.
We insisted and still do that. We call it global learning. That's our name for it. We insist that it's taught by all the heads of house. So that's four assistant heads teaching that, and other senior staff within the school teach it, or some of our very, very best teachers. teach it. So it's always, it's been really been sort of held in high regards that we've got the senior staff, because then it automatically brings a level of importance. The kids, the students realise that actually this is big business. I think there's a real risk when you just do it in tutor time as the main driver for it. Well, the tutor doesn't really want to do it. They're not a specialist. They can't really be bothered. It's 20 minutes. It's first thing in the morning. It doesn't have the same
impact. I also think there's an element of it's very last minute, isn't it? Yeah. Have a look that morning. What's on the shared area? Quickly go through the PowerPoint, check it. Okay. Like last minute photocopying, and then just try and get through it. And if you lead that subject as well, if you're a PSHE lead or personal development lead, you've got 15 people coming seeing you that morning going, I'm not sure what this is, because they've only checked it 5 minutes before absolutely. The start of the day.
There's no ownership of it, is there?
No.
So, I mean, what we've done actually, and we've done it for the first time this year, I'm trying to rotate my teachers around to try and have them as specialist as possible for the various topics. I mean, for example, today we've had year 11 having global learning, and the four topics today, one group studying religious studies, one's doing the prevent agenda, one's doing CCE, and one's doing mental health. What I've tried to do, so one of the heads of house is a qualified RE teacher, he's an RE specialist, so of course he took the group for the religious studies thing lesson. He'll have them for two lessons. Then another house will come to him and they'll have two lessons, and then another house, same time, someone's with the person who's a mental health specialist in it. And I think that's really important. It's something we've not done. We've always all taught it at the same time. And yeah, the specialist plans it, but you've got to deliver it. But now I'm trying to make sure the specialist plans it and delivers it. And it doesn't work perfectly because, of course, you'd need about 10 different people.
Yeah, I was going to say there's quite a lot of logistics involved, aren't there? And in terms of leadership, I think as a senior leader in a secondary school, PSE, the personal development curriculum, probably creates the most headaches, doesn't it, for leaders in schools in terms of logistics, delivery, specialisms, and all those things that you're referring to.
Certainly logistics. I mean, I say that. I've already alluded to, I like to see myself as a very efficient man, a very organised man. And I did mess up today. Some students came to me and said, where's the teacher? I said, oh, I have no idea. And I rang the person on my mobile, on the radio. I don't know. I just, because I was just copied and pasted things into a table, that the both their I just made a mistake with their surnames, basically. I put the wrong person in. It was actually doing interviews. That person wasn't on. And there was a bit of confusion. And yeah, there was a bit of panic. Momentarily for 10 minutes.
Takes
so,
me back but to being in a school. Kids in a room with no teacher. I did that once. I was I had an office and we were on a 2 weekly timetable, and I had year 9's lesson 4 week 1 Wednesday, lesson 4 week 2 Wednesday. I was in my office, so I've left something in my classroom, went to my classroom. It was actually week 1 Wednesday, and my year 9's had been sitting in there for half an hour without a teacher. So it sort of takes me back to those.
It's happened to the best of us, but yeah, I've got to be on it. I have got a great team who do always support. I try and give a bit of time back. So as I say, the first week of every half term, so six times a year, is an assembly that I lead, I plan, I prepare, and the staff then don't have to do anything. They just have to be there. And I think that's part of the payback as well, because there is a lot of expectation. I've moved us to knowledge organisers this year as well. For every single individual lesson or topic, dependent upon what they're doing, I'm now expecting there to be a knowledge organiser, so we've got evidence and the students have got something to take away. So we really are stepping up, you know, stepping up our expectations, really. And on my current audit, I think we're at SMSC gold level. If we should hopefully be sorting out an SMSC award this year. That's what I'm thinking, but I'll obviously reevaluate it as we get properly into the year. And it'd be nice to have that acknowledgement for what we do, because I think we do offer a really good programme for our students.
And what's the response from the students been like? Because they're the ones really who are important. It, for me, it's always been the conundrum of how you get the children engaged in it. They know it's important, but they sort of don't always really care about it, do they? So, like, how have your students responded to it? Have they bought into it? Do they see the importance of it?
I think they definitely buy into it. They know the importance, but I think it's just as you've said, you know, when you see it on the timetable, you just think, oh, well, I'm not getting a GCSE in this. I don't get a qualification in this. You know, how important is it? But one thing that sort of sticks with me as to how important it is, I was teaching a lesson last year, something to do with, it was on the sort of sex ed agenda. And there were some students sort of making some notes. It was a lesson on contraception, and they're making some notes. And I sat there and I thought, I'm actually really glad that the students trying to be responsible and they see the value of this, because of course nobody wants, you know, unwanted pregnancies or unwanted illnesses and infections. So at least there's an element of realizing some of this information is important. Yeah, other times it's hard. You know, if you're teaching a lesson on, I don't know, personal hygiene, for example, it's not the most exciting of things, is it? And, you know, I always try and do it with a bit of humour. And because we've got the senior staff teaching it and some of the best teachers, you know, even the driest of topics are going to be taught with some level of enthusiasm and skill. And I think that's sort of how we've got through. But I don't have a magic solution. I do not have a silver bullet to make it engaging, you know, to get complete and utter love and enthusiasm. God, I can't wait to go to his lesson this week. That's hard.
Yeah, but the importance of it can't be understated, can it? Because we're trying to create well-rounded young people who can leave school confident to go into the world as adults and actually engage with society and be a citizen. And unless they're taught those, it's not all about the academic, is it? No. And of course it's really important that we provide opportunities for children to achieve the best results they can, so that they've got a broad range of, you know, pathways that they can access. That's so important. But it's also really important to be a well-rounded person, and all of those things that you learn in PSE. I mean, the curriculum's so broad as well, isn't it? It's a minefield of, you know, you're learning how to manage your finances, and then you're learning how to put a condom on. It's like, what other curriculum has such extremes, yeah, of content? But it is really important. And as I think one of the things that this podcast is about supporting school leaders to lead their schools well. And unless you pay attention to your personal development curriculum, you're not going to be offering the curriculum for the pupils that's going to help them be successful in life, are you?
No, not at all. And I'd say that's why we put such high value on it. With, I repeat again, it's a timetabled weekly lesson. We've got the senior and the best teachers in the school delivering it. That then is complemented by assemblies. It's complemented by a strong tutor time program where we use Votes for Schools. We buy into that program, which is absolutely
fantastic. That's interesting as well, because I think that's something that's difficult too, is having a form time that's meaningful and useful as well, because that a lot of the time in schools, form time is dead time. I was never responsible for pastoral, but had I been, I would have been absolutely on top of form time and making it a worthwhile part of the day. So in the school that I was in, the last school, we actually changed form time, so it was later, because the children were just coming in late and missing it. They valued it so little, like there was so little value on it. The kids just thought, what's the point? We don't do anything, so we may as well just turn up for the start of lessons.
I've experienced tutor time at the start of the day, the end of the day, and in the middle of the day. And I think there's no perfect, they've all got strengths and weaknesses, pros and cons. I think that the start of the day is on whole the best time. It starts the day off right, and of course you've got to have a team strong enough to deliver it. You've got to, you know, be on the late gate and make sure people are actually in, but you can set the tone pretty well. And we've got to, you know, I sort of, I don't know, changed tutor time. I took it on as my MPQSL project, as just something to do, which is a very, very difficult thing, because how do you measure the impact?
Yeah, that I was just going to say that must have been a struggle with MPQSL as it was, it's not going to be like that anymore. But
no, it was very, very difficult. But of course, we had to do something that was for the benefit of the school. It was what was needed to improve the school rather than just trying to, you know, find a load of data targets to hit. But, you know, we've got a pretty decent system now. You know, so we've got fantastic assemblies. We've got votes for schools. We have drop everything.
What's votes for schools?
So Votes for Schools is a program that you can buy into. A company, every single week, they send you materials that are related to things that have begun on the news. So, and it obviously allows for discussion, for votes. What do you think? The one this week is on the COP26, you know, the climate change meeting that the UK are hosting. So I'll have to admit, I haven't actually looked at the details of the slide. I just sent
we'll let
it
you
out.
Off. We'll let you off.
Yeah.
By the time the show goes out and your staff are listening, it will all be forgotten about anyway.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. it's very good. And the team that put it together at Votes for Schools, you know, whoever they may be, are absolutely fantastic in it. And it's actually really engaging. When you walk around in the morning, there are some really great discussions from obviously year sevens all the way through to year 11s, which is good. Which is really good to see. Yeah,
I can imagine that would be good when you've got the vertical forms, actually, when you've got the view, like sort of the more sophisticated views of the year 11s, and that sort of filters down to what you're getting from some of year 7s that are probably quite naive and as opposed to mature views on things.
It's always been good to have. And we also we have a day dedicated to the House Championship. So that's another good one as well, because then you get that little bit of, no, you get a day off as such from tutor time, because it's a quiz, it's a little bit more relaxed. And our maybe an infringement of copyright here, but our House Championship team do Answer Smash. So if you've ever seen Richard Osman's House of Games on the BBC, so you have two questions, you have to smash the answers together. You know, there might be a picture, this is an example I always use. You've got a picture of former Chancellor Nigel Lawson, and the clue is, you know, a blue spiky cartoon character who fights Dr. Robotnik. So it's Nigel Lawson, Nick the Hedgehog.
Yeah, yeah.
You smash the answers together. And they, that's their sort of their thing at the moment they like doing. But the kids love it. It's a great opportunity. We'll have various quizzes and all sorts. So it's nice, because again, you get the competitive juices flowing. The tutor's desperate for their tutor group to do as well as possible. And it's a nice, so we try and make tutor time as purposeful as possible in order for it to and set the day up right. And often when we do, again, we had last year when we were sort of in out with the COVID business, I don't think we had a proper tutor time. I can't quite remember, but we said it definitely has made a difference to not having proper tutor time. I completely forgot. I can't remember if we had it or not. That shows how impactful it was.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but it has certainly made a difference, you know, coming back. We have house doors, by the way. So we have four entrances in the morning, and they're staffed by the head of house and the house team.
Right.
So students come past us every single day, skirts, shirts, top buttons. Good to see you. Good morning. How are you? Did you play your match last night? Oh God, did you catch EastEnders last night? All those things you can have, you can build those relationships, have those conversations, deal with those very small things, such as, you know, you've got your top button undone, to avoid any conflict further in the building. You know, then they go to the tutors. The tutors will say the same thing. Good morning, good to see you. How are you? Oh, just lower that skirt, or can you just take that ring off, or whatever it might be. So, you know, I think we've got a good culture. Again, if people want to come and see, you know, please get in contact. I'd always welcome visitors to the school.
I'll put your details in the show notes so people can get in touch with you. So what's next for you with the podcast? You're on to series two, aren't you, I think?
Yeah, we're on series two. My colleague Mike, who does the show with me, he's a man of analogies. Whenever we're in our SLT meetings, he's always got an analogy of some sort. But his analogy for the podcast is, we were just a group of mates who've gone out to a standard sort of pub, a standard boozer. We're just drinking a few Carlings, you know, nothing fancy. But then we've sort of turned around and we've realised we're now in the VIP section behind the red rope, sipping champagne, and we're sat with Tom Bennett, for example, or Sam Strickland, or David Weston, or Andy Buck. And please forgive me, other guests. I could be here all day listing, because we had 23 episodes in our first season and we've already done three in our second season. So we're now sipping the champagne behind the red rope, and we don't really know how we got there. And we've been trying to be very organic in our growth, because we didn't set out with an aim. We've just sort of kept going and kept finding what we are and trying to establish. And I think we like what we are. We like the informal approach. We like it to be conversational, you know, and the things we've discussed earlier. I think we like that. Guests seem to like it. And I will say again, you know, and please tag him in this, I cannot thank Tom Bennett enough, because he let, and Helene O'Shea, who helps him organise Research Aids, they allowed us to be part of Research Aids in a inverted commas official capacity, interviewing guests, and to give us that real sort of that boost and that help. And can never, you know, thank Tom enough for that. And that's sort of, you know, where we are. We've got some big American guests coming up. We've got a number of listeners in America. It's our second biggest market, America after the UK. So we've got some big American guests coming up to try and understand the American system, how it compares, and everything else. So we'll see where that goes. And we're just happy just to follow the flow of the river at the moment and see what happens. We enjoy doing it. We enjoy doing it. You know, we're not doing it to make money. We're just doing it to learn, to discuss, to chat, and we enjoy it. Except like all the darn editing afterwards. My words, God, that takes some time.
I know. I was saying to you, I think before we started recording, I don't know how you do that, because I don't work in a school anymore, and sometimes time is tight. But it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. I don't know where the time's gone. I could talk to you all evening. So thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the podcast. I really enjoy listening to it. So I think I look forward to some of the guests that you're getting on. If people want to find your podcast, find more about what you do, and how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, how so can they find Twitter, you? Yeah, so on Twitter it's at Daniel T Bull. That's B-U-L-L, not to be confused with Ball Bell, or as my father once called, Mr. Dull, which is more of a descriptor as opposed to a mistake. And the podcast is at _morethanajob. We've also got a fantastic website that we've had built over the summer by a company called Think Creative. You'll find their Twitter handle on our Twitter page as well. But it's morethanajob.co.uk, where we've got all our episodes. We've got information about the three people who host it. There's an automatic link to my Twitter and my LinkedIn page. We started to put a few blogs. I've been asked to do a couple of, well, three blogs for sort of three different people.
In all the spare time that you've got, Daniel.
In all the spare time, yeah. But again, because people give me their time, I think it's really important to give it back. So any blogs I've written for other people, I think I did one in February, one in March, and did one in September. I've put them on there as well. You know, I'm not a serial blogger, but I will throw them on there as well. So there's lots there. Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. It's been a real pleasure. Yeah, and I'm sure if you want to speak to us again at some point, if you're not bored of my voice, more than happy to come on. And I reckon my colleagues, Mike and James, from More Than a Job, would like to come on as well, and we can have a real good laugh.
Brilliant. Thanks, Daniel.
No worries. Take care. Thank you.
I want to say a great big thank you to Daniel for coming and joining us on the show today. He had so many interesting things to say. I really loved that conversation, and I would highly recommend you listen to the More Than a Job podcast, because it is absolutely brilliant. There's so much amazing CPD on there. The guests that they've had on, honestly, are just brilliant. So go and listen to that. And you can find Daniel on Twitter as well, like he just said, and access their podcast. That's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to sign up for one of my group coaching programs, I've just opened up cohort 5 for applications. So if you email me at vicky@womenleadwell.co.uk, I can give you more information and we can arrange to have a conversation about it, so you can find out exactly what the program can offer you. And also, as I said at the start of the show, the first 10 people to email me at vicky@womenleadwell.co.uk will get 50% off the price of the Women Lead Well Network, which is well worth joining. Have a great week, have a great holiday, enjoy the half term, and I will speak to you next time. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Transform Education Coaching, headteacherchats.com and the Teach Well Alliance.